I'm Rob Skinner, and this is the Rob Skinner Podcast. I interviewed J. Brian Craig nearly 4 years ago on episode 25. Last year, Brian was diagnosed with glioblastoma, a fast-growing and aggressive type of brain cancer. Listen today as I ask him about his diagnosis, how he and his family have learned to cope with a terminal disease, and what his plans are for his music, ministry, and future. All this and more on the Rob Skinner Podcast. Welcome back to the Rob Skinner Podcast. My goal is to inspire you to live a no-regrets life, make this life count, and multiply disciples, leaders, and churches. Brian, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. Good to be here.
How did you first hear about your illness?
Well, it was a big surprise. I was on vacation in Colorado the holidays. This is just a little over a year. It was a year in this last holiday season. I had been having some headaches. I thought I had maybe some sinus. I do get sinus infections or sinus pressure sometimes. So I thought I was having a sinus issue maybe, but then it got really bad. This is like after Christmas, before New Year's. That night I isolated because I thought maybe I had COVID, because COVID was kind of making a resurgence that holiday. That this was, you know, last holidays, not this past one, but the year before. So I thought maybe I had COVID, but then as the night progressed, I was in more and more pain, like just in a huge amount of pain. And then by the morning, I tried to take a COVID test, but I couldn't read the directions. And so then my wife was like aware that something was not right. And then I kind of quickly devolved into just, I was incoherent, and my father-in-law and my son, one of my two sons, kind of rushed me to the hospital. This was in the middle of a snowstorm, and as is happening right now in Denver, trying to get through the snow to the ER or to an urgent care. And I was throwing up. I was out. I was unconscious. I remember just little snapshots where I would kind of wake up and then I would be back unconscious again. Anyway, they got me to a facility, and then they were able to do an MRI, and they were able to tell that I had some kind of mass in my brain. I remember waking up, and I kind of knew this was something. I knew there was something like life threatening or that was going on, but I couldn't speak actually for a little bit. So it was kind of weird waking up like that. Then I was able to speak. They used steroids and things to bring down the swelling, I think, in my brain. And so then I was able to speak. But then they said I needed emergency surgery. So I flew back as quickly as I could back to my home area of LA, and then went to the ER and was able to schedule an emergency surgery to have the mass removed. And they were able to remove all of it, or, you know, to good margins. Not all of it. They can never get all of it, but so that was good. But then the kind of cancer it is glioblastoma. And so that's a really, really aggressive form of brain cancer that always comes back. So then, I've been dealing with treatment from that ever since, and kind of the life effects of that. But that's how I found out.
Oh my gosh.
Kind of a long answer to your question. Yeah.
Are you still struggling with symptoms from the cancer?
Well, it's been a long road to recovery. So, yes, I think I'll never. I had damage to my left hemisphere of my brain, left occipital lobe, so in the back, and so I couldn't see out of my right side. My right peripheral was gone entirely initially, and then also just some mental effects, which we could maybe talk about later. But those things have gotten better over time. It's just a long road to recovery. You know, you do chemo and radiation and a lot of other things to try to recover. And so now I'll never probably be back to baseline in terms of, so I do have, you know, a lot of still effects of just scattered thinking or, but I'm not in pain, you know, I'm not, I have treatments I've got to deal with. I'm not doing radiation right now at the moment. So that's a real blessing. I'm not dealing with the side effects of radiation. So I'm kind of in a stable position right now. They call it, surveillance. This phase I'm in is surveillance, which is just regular MRIs and just kind of, for the medical professionals, is sort of wait till the cancer returns. Cause this, like I said, this glioblastoma, it's a terminal condition. So it's expected to keep coming back, but I'm just kind of trying to beat it as long as I can, you know, and praying for years, trying to lean into whatever God wants me to be doing in this phase that I'm in. But anyway.
Have the doctors given you any kind of a time frame?
Well, it's tough. I mean, glioblastoma, if you just Wikipedia it, it's most people only make it a year. If I make it 5 years, I'll be in the, you know, 90th percentile or the 10% of the people that would make it 5 years. But there's people who've survived 10 or 20 years, you know, with it. So it's kind of a, I mean, all of us are terminal, right? Yes, all right. All of us don't know. We all know we're going to die, you know. So, but it's just, I know how I'm going to die, most likely, unless I'm hit by a car or something. Mm-hmm. So, but I, you know, so it's, there's a lot of uncertainty not knowing how long I have. But I've gone to, as I kind of have, I just had an MRI this week, and I'm having them every 2 months now. Is that right? Yeah. And it showed no progression. So every time I have a stable MRI like that, it's really good news, you know, and just makes it feel like, okay, well, I'm going to have a little more time. Whereas in the beginning, it's sort of, especially right after my surgery. I mean, I had moments where I really thought I was going now. But now it's sort of like the longer I'm here, the more I kind of, okay, maybe I have a little more time. But yeah, it's an interesting time in life right now, Rob, but I'm just praying to, you know, God uses it however he can use it, and just try to lean into what does God want to do with my life right now in this moment, and just kind of living every day that way.
When you woke up and the doctor said you've got cancer, you've got this particular type of aggressive brain cancer, how'd you grapple with that news?
Well, it was very hard. You know, I remember crying and, I mean, wailing, and I was with my parents, and they had flown into town, and my wife, and we were at this place trying to get a little, you know, because we've been at the doctor's for quite a while, and we were trying to get something to eat, and so I was crying and trying to pull it together. It was really hard. I mean, you know, just, it's not what I wanted, you know. That's the big thing I feel like I remember, is just feeling like, this is not what I wanted. This is not what I planned. This is not how it's supposed to be, you know, right, like
exactly.
I picture myself with my grandkids and, you know, maybe great grandkids, but for sure grandkids, you know, and you know, being able to be around for a long time. And, you know, we have this sort of expectation that we all are supposed to get at least 75 years, you know, so if it's anything less than that, you know, it's, we're gypped. And so I just turned 53, but I was 52 at the time. And, you know, it's like, I'm supposed to get more time. Maybe I was 51. Anyways, I don't know. I'm bad with math now ever since my surgery. But initially, yeah, it was really, really hard. Something happened that made us all laugh, and then we were laughing. But you know, it was really just a day or two of just, and I shouldn't say it's just smooth sailing from there, but it's like, that was the hardest sort of moment. And then every day since then is just sort of a choosing to surrender, choosing to let go. A lot of the lessons I learned doing a ministry sabbatical. First during COVID, a lot of lessons I learned during COVID, and then a lot of lessons I learned during a ministry sabbatical. Really, if I hadn't had those lessons, I don't know how I could have made it through this season I'm in now. So, I feel like God was really preparing me for this through some of those things, through that sabbatical and the time of COVID. Just things that God taught me during those times really helped me a lot,
What were those things that helped you to keep things together? What lessons are you referring to?
So COVID, we went through a lot with our family. One of my kids has really suffered with some severe mental illness. And we went through a lot of stuff as a family. That taught me a lot to just let go of what I can't control. I remember dealing with that and learning to have hope, and learning to trust when I am not in control. I like probably all men that I know, I struggle with anger, and I realize when I get angry, it's because I can't control something. I want control. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of, at one point, through self-reflection, I realized, okay, when I'm gritting my teeth, and when I say angry, it's not like I yell and scream at anybody or punch anybody. It's just, right. I'll clench my jaw. My wife would, notice this little, this is tensing here, but it's because I want control. And, through dealing with some stuff we were going through as a family, it's like, I felt the Spirit one time saying, when are you going to learn to let go of what you can't control? Mm-hmm. And I've heard that a few times, over these things I've gone through. So COVID was another time like that. It's like, we had all these plans, 2020, we had plans to gather as a whole family of churches, and Marshall Mead's, my best friend, and he was the one planning all that, and so we had this big plan for 2020, and we had plans in my local community, my local church, and all of these plans, and then all of a sudden that's just out the window, and the whole world is just silent, and we're also reckoning with our own sin as a nation, our own sin of racial inequality and the things that we've done, and then also our own polarization, our own these camps that we put ourselves into, everybody's like leaning into those tribalism, and so it's just sort of this reckoning as feel right. like as a globe. So all of that, all of those things, helped me to just learn to let go and trust God. And I can't control any outcomes. I can't control the outcomes of my ministry that I lead. I can't control my family. I can't control what choices they make. I have to let go and trust, I have to make this decision to trust God. And even just starting to practice Sabbath, at that time, this is before I took a ministry sabbatical, but learning to try to practice Sabbath, which is really about stopping, it literally means Sabbath means stop, and it's built into creation. It's right there from the very first page of the Bible. It's all built in this 7-day structure. God built creation in that way because he made us to need rhythms and to need rest and to need, and what Sabbath is about is trusting that there will be enough, right? Mm-hmm. It's you gather for 6 days, but that seventh day you do not gather. And what do? They go out and try to gather the manna, and it's like, and then it's nasty or whatever. And Moses is like, I told you,
right.
But we don't trust. We just want control. And so I feel like God is always teaching us to let go of control. And God's been teaching me that. To let go of control. And so ministry sabbatical was similar. We after 2020 and kind of the things that followed was we were hosting our weekly worship services here in my home, you know, virtually, and my family was sort of running our online ministry, and we would do a live stream every Sunday. And so that was really kind of fun, actually. But it was also like taxing, because at this point, you know, I've been in the ministry over 20 years with no break. And I think we as a fellowship of churches were starting to see, oh yeah, there's some value in taking a ministry sabbatical, or learning to stop, or learning not to just always be working. And some of these ideas of, okay, you are who God made you. You are loved. You are loved for who you are, not for what you do. And you're a human being, not a human doing, you know, and just some [S2] Right. [S1] Of those kinds of things. And so taking a ministry sabbatical in 2022, I think it was 2022. Yeah, I get the numbers wrong, but was really helpful. Just, it was hard for me. It was hard for me to stop. It was hard for me not to just always be working, always multitasking. Cause I mean, Rob, I'd been doing that for 20 years, just always multitasking, always trying to get the most from, you know, suck the most marrow out of every bite of life, you know, but just like getting things done, like a lot of tasks, checking off tasks and stuff. And, right. And it was hard to just stop and be still. And sometimes when you stop, I've heard this from other ministers, you know, sometimes it can get dark because you're not used to it, you know, and suddenly, you know, you're reckoning with some deeper questions. And I had a little bit of that experience, but mostly it was really good. It was really great. But my wife's mother fell really ill, and then she passed away during that time, kind of the tail end of our sabbatical. And so the last month, we took 3 months, but the last month was really kind of wrapped up with that. But that was, you know, that kind of makes you think about life, you know, when you lose someone. That was the closest person I've ever lost, you know, just other than people in the ministry or family members, aunts or uncles or my grandparents. But losing my wife's mom, you know, we were very close because Dessa and I have known each other since I was a teenager, you know,
right,
so,
right.
And she, you know, been her home has been sort of my home away from home in right. addition to my parents' house. So that was a lot, you know, but those, the things, all of that really helped me for this time now, then all these same ideas, these same lessons of trust, you know, there's this passage where it's in Isaiah where God says, in repentance and rest is your salvation, in quietness and trust is your strength. And that's something that just comes back to me a lot, even during this time where I have to trust. And repentance and rest is your salvation, in quietness and trust is your strength. That's just so profound. And not even, I think, who we were as sort of a ministry culture. We were more about problem solving, trusting in structure, trusting in plans and production. And those are not bad things in and of themselves. It just can't be our fundamental trust, can't mm-hmm. be in those things. Right. You know, I think we should use ministry ideas and strategies and all that. But ultimately, our trust is in God. Yeah. And sometimes we're left with nothing but God, right? And is right. He enough? And in that same passage in Isaiah, it's interesting because the prophet says, you know, in repentance and trust is your salvation, and quiet, and repentance and rest is your salvation, and quietness and trust in your is your strength. But you would have none of it. Mm. You said, no, we'll flee on horses. We'll, you know, so we want to trust in these things we can see. You know, we want to trust in horses and chariots and Egypt and world powers and, you know, empires and these other things. And yet God is always trying to bring his people back to trusting him, that he right. is enough.
Right.
So anyway, I know I'm kind of long-winded, but everything that I learned in those years, you know, 2016 and 17 and 18 and 2020, and all really helped me with this year, you know, reckoning with this cancer and all of this uncertainty. I feel like God was preparing me for this battle I'm in now. Right. So, really grateful for that.
What's changed in your life or your daily routine since this happened?
Well, a lot. I mean, you know, my treatment was in my oncology team is in Santa Monica. We kind of moved operations up there because I have better access to just the very latest in terms of medical trials or things that I might be able to participate in down the road. So I'm kind of, so every day I was driving to Santa Monica. So for me, that's, you know, about an hour and a half sometimes to get there, in LA traffic. And, but every day for radiation, cause you go through radiation for a month and, it might be longer. I can't remember the time, but, and, so I had to, both of us had to step out of work, obviously. And then also just my brain at the beginning, I couldn't see, I couldn't really read. I could definitely couldn't use a computer. I could use my phone, but you know, so it was just a real adjustment to my brain. And then also I kind of was more right-brained, after the surgery. So everything is connected and everything is, you know, I just see these big picture kinds of things more than sort of compartmentalizing. But because of that, just one conversation with someone at church could send me into like a spinning of all these, do you know what I mean? Like, right. That's a lot better now. I can compartmentalize a lot better. I've been able to get back to a lot of, a lot more ministry appointments. And even though I'm on disability, I'm starting to maybe look at being able to come back working a few hours. I've kind of been doing it anyway, the last several months or since the fall or something. But, so I've got there's other people now who took my spot in terms of planning our ministries, you know, our sermon series and all our worship leading stuff, all of that. I had to step out of all of that instantly, you know, and, but other people who, I've been able to, you know, be working with through these years really stepped up and have stepped into these other roles. And I'm really proud of our church. It's really been, they've really rallied around us as a family. And, I'm just really so grateful for the community we're part of, you know. It's really amazing. But so life's changed a lot, you know. Yeah. And I can't do everything I used to do. I definitely can't multitask at all. Even I have even my wife and I joke, because when we're trying to leave the house, she's the one in our relationship that always keeps the conversation going. She's very verbal. I'm more of an introvert, and she's more of a, you know, she's a real relational person. And so we're trying to leave and she's asking me questions or talking to me or telling me stories. And I just can't do it. I can't listen and get ready at the same time. So it's like, you know, I used to try, now I can't even try, you know? So I have to sort of do one thing at a time and, kind of, you know, one day at a time. At the beginning it was like kind of one moment at a time, one hour at a time. Now it's kind of sort of, you know, a few days at a time, trying to plan what we're doing.
Speaking of your family, how has your family dealt with this? If that were me, I'd really be wrestling with the concept of like, God, this isn't fair. And I think you touched on that a little bit earlier, but I just would feel like, hey, I'm too young for this to be happening. I've got a lot to do in my life. This is not fair. How's your family dealt with it? Your parents are on the East Coast. Aside from you, what's the impact?
Yeah, I mean, my wife is definitely the hardest one, and I think it's hard also because I think people don't always think to ask about her or even just minister to her because you know I'm the one with cancer, but she's the one that is facing the burden, you know, of trying to, of life, the prospect of life without me, the prospect of, you know, again, everything we had planned, you know, the weight of the stuff our kids go through and they're dealing with, you know, it's way heavier if it's like all on her. So it's just that's been, I mean, that's really tough. Whereas for me, you know, if I pass away, it's like I'm with the Lord, you know, and life is good, but man, she's got the heavier burden. So that it's really hard. You know, she's got good friends that check in with her and stuff. And she's had some of her own like health issues that are kind of scary, but that's actually going better right now. So that's good. But anyway, so it's been really hard on her. I mean, for sure, but hard on my parents as well. Hard on my kids. You know, each of my children sort of deal with it differently, kind of cope in use different sort of coping skills, but it's really hard, you know, it's really hard, but, we're trying to just focus more on what we have, not what we don't have, you know, and focus on, one of the brothers in my ministry here gave me the advice to cultivate delight, and shared with me a podcast he had listened to. And just, I love that idea of cultivating delight, just trying to focus every day on what am I grateful for? What do I get to do? What do I get to, you know, cause I have good friends who were gone instantly, you know, Kevin Maines or Dan Rice or, you know, people who were just suddenly gone. And, you know, I feel for them. I feel for their families. And, you know, I really, really, really close to, I mean, Kevin was one of my biggest influencers in my life, you know, for him to be gone so instantly like that, is rough, you know? So I feel grateful that I have, you know, this extra time, so to speak. But it's also comes with a burden because I'm living with this sort of, it's like living with a death sentence or something, you know, where you don't know, but you know how much time you have, you know?
Right.
So I try to focus more on these opportunities. And so we don't talk as a family a lot about, you know, death or about, you know, we just try to kind of be in the moment and, you know, and enjoy what we can right now. And, but each of our kids, I mean, it's really profound, the effect on them and in different ways, and not to share their own stuff because they're adults, but it's been hard, you know, for sure.
You're up and around, you're mobile, you're able to do some small things in the ministry, which is great. I'm so thankful for that. What are you looking forward to? I mean, are there any bucket list items with that you're thinking about, like, I'd really like to get this done before I pass?
I've tried to not be too, it's easy for my brain to go straight to that. And like, what do I have to get done? What do I have to get done? And so I've tried to resist that in some ways, to just sort of, like I was talking about, with just focusing on being and like, kind of like if all I get is what I've had so far, that has to be enough, you know, like I have to trust God. But I do want more. I mean, I do want more years. I'm praying for 20 years, you know, and every day I pray for that. But I also am trying to like, trust that I've had a full, you know, every day in my prayer times, I'm sort of wrestling with, you know, I've had a good life. I mean, I really, really have. I've been so blessed. I mean, I'm one of the most blessed person on the planet. And, you know, just trying to focus on that. But I do want to, you know, do more stuff. I'm able to speak at church here and there more. And I'm trying to, share this journey I'm on, you know, through sort of my music or through my podcast, or not, I don't really have a podcast, but I have a YouTube channel. And, so on my YouTube channel, I try to share, you know, things, short sort of songs, but then also what I'm going through with my cancer and sort of share my journey. I'm trying to, there's different organizations I've gotten involved with that are serving the brain tumor community. It's because there's a lot of people, I mean, many, many thousands of people, even just in my area. I mean, thousands in America, but hundreds in my area, you know, that deal with brain tumors. I mean, it's more common than you would realize. And so there's something called the Brain Tumor Network, or different things that I'm trying to get involved with and help out with. And especially as I get better, I'm trying to give back. So I'm trying to, like, there's a brother in our family of churches in Canada who's going through this. And so we're talking regularly, and, you know, another brother who's got terminal illness that we talk regularly. And these guys are a little older than me, but it's still just, you know, there's something about, you know, we're in the same boat. And there's a sister, you know, in Sacramento who has the same illness, the same glioblastoma. And so we've talked, and just trying to, like, kind of be a resource for people, trying to really give to people who are on the margins, or just kind of, I don't know, God keeps giving me all these things to do and giving me opportunities. Like, somebody gifted me an opportunity to go stay in Lake Tahoe in this cool place for like four or five days. And wow. So that they just had a timeshare or something. And so Dustin and I kind of dropped everything and went up to Lake Tahoe, and it was incredible. It was amazing. You know, I loved it. It was just so God gives me little things like that. You know, it's hard to, some people have said, well, you know, you should just focus on, you know, go on a cruise, go on this, or do kind of, like you said, like the bucket list thing, like go to China or go to, but it's hard because also mentally and emotionally we're grieving, you know, we're grieving, especially my wife, she's grieving. So it's not like this vacation, ah, let's go. Right. You know what I mean? It's like a disconnect. Yep. Mm-hmm. There. And so it's harder to try to, but then God gives us these things. God right. gives us these little, you know, hikes, or even just like going to the marriage retreat and just getting extra time together, just little gifts like that we have together. So that's really good. But
that's great.
But I do want to do more music. I was able to, since my surgery, I was able to do two albums. One was my daughter's album. And so I was able to work with her on that. And, cause I lost the ability to do a lot of things, but music is something I could still do. So that was a really real blessing. And I can still hear well, I can still, you know, I can feel like I can hear better. I feel like I can hear like more in a mix. If I'm mixing down, I feel like I can hear even more than I used to. I don't know if that's true, but, so working on her album was a lot of fun. And then an album of mine with songs that, these are songs that I've been trying to record for, in some cases, like almost a decade or something, but they were, just hadn't gotten to finish them. And so I was able to get both of those two big projects done, Cora's album and my album. And then I've been able to just do a lot more. That since then I've been more busy with ministry appointments, but I do want to try to finish more music, get as much of it, especially stuff that I've written. I want to like leave it when I'm right. gone. I wanted somebody to have it.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, that was one of my questions is, are you still able to play guitar after the surgery? Sounds like it's yes.
Yeah. At first I was a little worried because I mean, one of the first things we did was, you know, pick up my classical, like, it's just like, looks just like yours. There, this classical guitar, can I play any chords? And at first I wasn't sure if I could. I really couldn't remember chords, but then I was able to. And what was interesting, Rob, is you appreciate this as a musician. The first things I could play were the very oldest things, like the very first songs I ever played on that same guitar. Like these two chords, or even some of the first songs I wrote on guitar, because I never had guitar lessons or anything. I just sort of learned by, I took piano lessons as a kid, and so I, you know, played keyboards and stuff, but then I learned guitar just picking it up. But the first things I could play were the earliest things. And so some of these old songs that Marshall Mead and I would play in a band together when we were in high school, in college and stuff like that.
This last Sunday we played I've Got a Home in Heaven. I was thinking about you every time. I mean, we're playing songs almost every Sunday from your catalog, and you've left an impressive catalog of worship music. I mean, I don't know how many songs you've written, but what are your plans for that catalog after you're gone?
I didn't have plans to begin with. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, you know, it's sort of something God just sort of did. So, in terms of just these songs, sort of the way that like my friend Jeff Fawcett put this songbook together, and then, you know, in our little family of churches, we were sharing these songs, and then just people liked these songs, you know, and then they were translated on their languages and all this kind of stuff. So it's kind of, as an artist, you sort of send something out in the world and then see what happens with it. And I feel like God has just taken these songs and done something way beyond what I ever envisioned. So I just leave that up to God. I tried to release as much stuff. I'm trying to release as much stuff as I can sort of on all the platforms. And after I'm gone, that should continue, you know, that those should still be there. They're set up in a way that, they don't, kind of go away. I think, I don't know what happens if all of Spotify crumbles or, you know, so I'm not, you know, but I think that's the cool thing about music and songs is they are, I mean, most of the songs that I know from my childhood, I just know from, they're just in my head, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the cool thing about music, and God, music has always been like that for God's people. I mean, that's the Psalms, right? They're just, we have them now because they were passed on. And so I just give it to God and give it to his church and see mm-hmm. what God does. I love, the more I am not part of it, it's just something nobody even knows. They're not thinking about me. I want God to use it for even a bigger purpose than I had in mind. And he's already done that in my life. Like even like a song like Anchor for the Soul, like that song, I was asked to go to this singles retreat. My friend Tony Martin was asked to do the music, and then he sort of sub asked me to, like, it was funny because Ed Anton was in charge of this retreat, but he didn't know I was even coming, and I don't think we even knew each other really that well at that time. But so he asked Tony to do the music, then Tony asked me to do the music and flew me out there. So then when Tony picked me up from the airport, he said, hey, do you have a song for this retreat, you know, Anchor for the Soul, or could you write a song? And this is like picking me up from the airport, you know. And I was like, I don't know, sure. I mean, we could see, I'll pray and see if God comes up with something. And that night that he picked me up, this retreat was supposed to be outside. It was called Beach Dock. So it was on the beach outside, all these singles coming together, you know, 100, 200 singles or something, all coming together for this retreat. And, you know, that night there was this terrible rainstorm and lightning and thunder. And like, you know, we don't get storms like that here in California, you know, but boy, there in Virginia Beach, it was like rain, you know, rain and just lightning and thunder. And so that line in the song is very literal. You know, there was thunder and the lightning can be very frightening, but God is in control. It was very, very literal, you know, that like God is going to let us have our retreat, you know? And, cause the next morning I woke up and I did have that song in my head, the chorus of it. And then, you know, later I added the other verses from kind of pulling from Charles Dark in Every Hand or some of these other kind of hymns that I like.
Right.
But yeah, that song has become something so more meaningful to people. You know, I've heard from so many people who like, you know, that song kind of kept them going, or it made them really, it helped them through, you know, the loss of a loved one. I've sung that song at, you know, a bunch of different people's funerals and memorial services and, people I, you know, dearly love, you know, people that, you know, anyway, I can't even, it's amazing what God has done with this.
That's great.
This little song, you know what I mean? So it's bigger than me, I guess, is what I'm trying
to
say.
Right. So I take it you're not receiving royalties from these songs.
There is a small royalty from recordings. Like if somebody downloads or gets something off Spotify,
right,
there is a, like a 0.00000004.
Got it.
You know,
got it.
So no, it's a little bit, you know, and then CCLI also is, CCLI is an organization that helps that's for churches to use.
Right.
With and so I'm registered with CCLI, my songs, and so that there's more revenue from that. I mean, it used to be, I mean, the most I ever made off of my music in the past with selling CDs was probably like $5,000 a year or something. I don't know if I'm supposed to be giving details like that, but that was when CDs, you know, that was pretty
right. Sure.
You would make more money, but the streaming royalties are really minimal. Just right. You'd have to really be a rock star, but the CCLI, you get a little more, that's a little better. So anyway, and that will transition to my family when I'm gone. Mm. So yeah, there's a little bit there, a little bit something. But
Brian, you've had about a year since you first heard about this, and how do you evaluate your life when you look back?
Well, I mean, just God has always been there. I it's weird because I think God's time frame is so different than ours. So I think in grappling with my prognosis, I try to enter God's space. I try to enter his space every day. You know, when I pray the Lord's Prayer every day, and kind of that's my framework. I mean, I might pray for an hour, but it's through the framework of the Lord's Prayer. And, you know, as I'm praying, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. You know, I'm trying to reflect on who he is and what he's done and what he will do. So I just, I think he looks at all of time and space and eternity and just all at once, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? So mm-hmm. like, I love science. And so on a cosmic time frame, or even the planet Earth, I mean, on a planet Earth time frame, we just got here. Humans were just made, like humans just showed up. I mean, if you go to a science museum and you look at the timeline they always have on the wall or something, it's like humans just got here. I mean, human Homo sapiens, you know, and depending on how you look at what is a human, but all of human history is just, it's just an instant, you know, yeah. on his time scale, it's just an instant. And so for me to have gotten to participate in all that I've gotten to participate in is just such a blessing. Seeing this international ministry that I'm a part of, seeing all these churches be planted, seeing God even do something different than we had planned with that, you know, and he is still doing. And I know there's a lot of uncertainty there, but, you know, God is so much bigger. God is in control. I mean, even the nation I'm in, I love the nation of the United States of America, but it's not eternal, right? It's just like all these kingdoms in the Bible there. And so I just am so thankful to being able to be a part of that kingdom, you know, that of that God's, you know, that some of my songs or some of my work could be sort of anything that has to do with his kingdom come and his will be done. You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. and in very real ways, it, you know, God has used some of these songs to help people keep going with their faith, or help people to grieve, or help people to feel inspired, or help people to reflect on Jesus and what he's done for us, or, do you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I mean, God has really been so good to me, and God has used me in ways I didn't even imagine. You know, I always loved music, and I always wanted to be a rock star, and, you know, wanted to like I loved my biggest influences, you know, they're about 10 years older than me, were U2 and other bands like them, you know, but, you know, the alternative kind of that kind of music. And, so I always was sort of looking at, I wanted to do that, you know, I wanted to be, have my music have, you know, change the world. Like they'll talk about music can change the world or whatever, right, you know, right. Bono will talk about that. And so I wanted that, but then I also, many years ago, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, whatever, when I was pursuing that and trying to kind of break into the music industry, I just realized this isn't for me. It's just, I think some people can do it and, you know, be a disciple of Jesus and be in that industry. I just couldn't I really applaud speech or what he does or other people who are able to do it. I just couldn't do it because it was, I couldn't, I just remember praying, God, if you want to use my songs or use my music for something, you have to do it your way.
Right.
Because my way, it doesn't work, you know? And, and God did that. Like, I feel like he took these songs that I was just writing for my little local congregation and then turned them into these things where I, you know, people are, just a few weeks ago, I heard this song in, you know, in China that's translated into, you know, and all these disciples are together singing this song, you know, and just amazing, you know, yeah. and this other language. And people will send me something on Facebook of people singing in, you know, Africa or in China or in Japan or these other places, some song that I wrote and they've translated and it's just, or in Russia, you know, in Ukraine. And it's just crazy. Like, wow, God is crazy. God isn't crazy. It's crazy what God does, you know, with our little contributions, you know? So I'm just really blessed to have seen what he did. So I don't have any real plan other than just, I want to finish as much music as I can and then share it. But I've already, God's already done a lot, you know?
Oh, it's, Brian, it's so amazing. I mean, you're a singer, a songwriter, a teacher, an evangelist, a family man. It's really, really impressive in such a short life. Just, you know, 53 years. I just go, wow, it's amazing how you've allowed God to use your life in such a powerful way. In closing, what advice would you give to those who are dealing with major health issues?
You know, I guess, I mean, just go to Jesus. I think go to God with whatever, like what I love about, the Psalms is just they're so broad. There's just so much allowed in there. I mean, there's a psalmist who's so in exile, who's so angry, he's just asking for God to do to the Babylonians, you know, like just throw their kids against the rocks, you know, like that is harsh language. And some people are like, wow, the Bible is harsh. No, this is how much God allows us to be real. Like this is the suffering of exilic people who, I mean, they've lost everything. They've been carried off. I mean, think about that. You know, you're disrupted from your community. You're refugees, you know, and you're yanked from your community and you're carried off in prison and all the, you know, fighting men are killed probably. And then the people who are weaker are carried off and, you know, that, but in exile, just praying, that's what the Psalms are full of, those kinds of expressions. So I think when you go through difficult things or hard things, or I think we just need to, be better at grieving, or better at praying the whole psalm book. You know, praying the whole thing is available to us. I think, especially in my own sort of church culture, I feel like we had a kind of a hermeneutic of conquering and victory, and which is true. Jesus is the victor. Jesus conquers death. But that the short term might mean suffering. The short term might mean loss. The short term might mean, where is everybody? My church is like shrinking, or you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not always, we just want to always be winning. And part of that's just kind of an American thing. Like every company has to always be growing. It's if you're not growing, you're dying. And I get it, but the Jesus is there for us even when we are dying, even when we are suffering, even when we are hurting. And the Bible, and especially the Psalms, but a lot of the Bible, I mean, is full of, it's a story of people who are not always winning. I mean, you know, it's the opposite, right? Mm-hmm. It's God's still God even when Israel, even when the temple is destroyed, God is still God, you know? Right. What is bigger than the temple? But, and so that Jesus is the epicenter of that. Jesus is the epicenter of, I am the temple. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am, you know, Jesus is central, you know, it just makes me want to cry because, Jesus is so good. And I felt his presence through my darkest moments and through, the times when I was the most, just my brain was really suffering the most are the times that I felt Jesus's presence the most. And I'm not trying to be just, you know, I think of that footprints in the sand, you know, I'm not trying to be like that, but it's just true. Like that's just, his presence is what we need. And so my advice is just follow Jesus, you know, and I know that's so simple, but, and I just think of even the way he died, into your hands I commit my spirit, you know, my ruach, I commit my being, my life energy, I'm committing that to you. And so that's what I have to do. I know that's in my future. I don't like to think about that. I don't like to think about dying, but I know that I've got God with me through whatever is ahead. You know, I know I've got his presence with me through whatever's ahead. So that's what keeps me going, is just knowing that he's there and Amen. He's always available and I can always pray to him, you know, and that he cares and he loves me. And it's not about what I do or it's not about being perfect. It's not about never sinning again. You know, it's just Jesus has done it all, you know, right. Jesus has done it all. And so that makes me want to give back as much as I can to him and just trust him, you know, with whatever time I have left, you know? So anyway, I know I'm long-winded and all over the place, but.
Brian, thank you so much for coming on the program and sharing your life. I know it's difficult. It's a sensitive topic, but thank you for all you've done, the life you've lived. And I'm going to be praying for a long life going forward, an extension for healing. And I'll be asking for the listeners to do the same.
Yeah, thank you. Please do. And I appreciate all of you guys who are listening to this and just so many people who are praying for me. And it's just humbling and overwhelming, you know, just to hear from people I don't even know who say, I pray for you every day, or, you know, it's just like, wow, you know, that is amazing. So I thank you so much. And thank you for all the work that you do, Rob. And I'm praying for you as well. And I really appreciate, especially, you know, I want to talk to you more at some point about, you know, I know you're kind of, I look at you as an expert of small church, like, and like, how can we do small church? When I say small, not really small, but you know what I mean by small church? Like, how can we do it well? That's the way that we're going to win the world, right? Is a community kind of focus. So I appreciate the work that you're doing in that area. And I want to help with that. Like, that's a passion of mine. So maybe we can get together again and talk about that.
That'd be great. Thank you. Thanks for listening. Here's how you can help support the program. First, hit the subscribe button and let your friends know about it. Secondly, read and review one of my books, either How to Plant and Grow a Church or Courage, How to Make This Life Count. You can find them on my website, robskinner.com, because my goal is to inspire you to make this life count, live a no-regrets life, and multiply disciples, leaders, and churches. Have a great day and make this life count.